Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to the latest Empire Podcast interview special. Tom Hiddleston has been playing Loki, the god of mischief, Odin's son, the rightful king of Jotunheim, an all-round horny bugger for nigh on a decade now, and in the process he's made himself one of the most important cogs in the giant wheel that is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, with the dawn of Avengers Infinity War, he may be saying goodbye to Loki once and for all. May, emphasis, heavily on May. I sat down with Tom recently in a London hotel room and had a good old natter about his life as Loki. He was on great reflective form, had a lot to say about how Loki came to be, his favourite moments, an alternate fate for the tricky trickster, and much, much more. He even answers some questions from his fans, the ever-loyal Hiddlestoners. Hiddlestoners, is that right? Hiddlestonians? Anyway, his ever-loyal fans. So, here you go. Tom Hiddleston, talking about life as Loki. Enjoy. We are delighted to be joined on the Empire Podcast by a stalwart of the Empire Podcast and perhaps more importantly, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Tom Hiddleston. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, no, thanks for coming back. I was going to play Frank Sinatra's My Way as you walked in through the door.
It's very good. What are the lyrics to that? Regrets. I've had a few.
Yeah. Have you had a few? Or have you had no regrets?
No regrets. You can't regret anything. Yeah. It's water under the bridge.
Yeah. We can't talk about this movie, though.
We can't talk about it because I haven't seen it.
Oh, really?
And neither have you.
No, I haven't.
At the time of recording.
At the time of recording, yeah.
And I never read it. This is the only Marvel film I'm in that I've never read. And I think that's true of almost everyone in this large cast, except for maybe three actors got to see the whole thing.
Okay, I'm guessing Downey, because he gets to see everything.
Yes.
He has the keys to the kingdom.
Yes.
And I wonder who the other two are. This is interesting. I'll try and figure out. Do you know who they are? Or you,
one
or
of
you
them's
just...
called Chris.
Well, that narrows it down.
The seven of them. Yes, so it's weird. We can't talk about it because I don't know what happens. Yeah.
Okay.
Genuinely don't, though.
Oh, good. Okay.
There was footage. The footage that's being screened in the run-up to the release was new to me as well. Uh-huh. And it was a thrill to see because I thought, wow, look at that.
And you're not in that footage. They're holding you back. They're holding back what happens to Loki. Yeah. If indeed anything happens to Loki.
I mean, he's just like having a takeaway.
Yeah, he's picnicking.
He's just having a sandwich and a cup of tea going, guys, just get it together. It's only an Infinity War.
He's running through the fields. So what I thought we could do instead, Tom, is we could have a Loki conversation. We could talk about your, I was going to say 8 years as the God of Mischief. But of course it's longer. You probably started filming Thor when 2000.
No, so it's actually so technically, I suppose it is eight. But I was cast in April of 2009.
Okay.
So in my head, it feels like nine.
Okay, so we're coming up. The ninth anniversary is just around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. I think also the audition process was before that. So Chris and I were cast at the same Hemsworth. That is of the 11 Chrises we're talking about. That number's going to get larger.
There's Chris Downey Jr. There's Boseman.
Chris Cumberbatch. Chris Hemsworth and I were cast in April 2009, mm-hmm. And then really from that point on, it felt like he and I and Kenneth Branagh were building this world. Mm. And what's interesting is in the years since, to sort of use a slightly ordinary metaphor, we kind of put new bells and whistles on the bicycle every time.
Mm.
But in that event, it felt like we were building the bicycle from scratch. Mm. We were building Asgard. We were building the Bifrost. We were building the Rainbow Bridge. We had all these things from the comics, which Kevin Feige will admit he was a little, he was anxious about getting right. Mm. Because at the time, the Marvel Universe was Iron Man. It was grounded. It was earthbound. Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr., recognizable world people could relate to. Mm. Suddenly you're dealing with eight-legged horses and shining cities in the sky and frost giants, and we all wondered whether audiences would accept it. And so it was trying to take what we could from the comics, from the Norse myths, from you know, these ancient stories that have been in the consciousness for so long. Mm. So that's what it feels like it started in 2009, I guess.
It's been fascinating watching the evolution of the MCU over the last few years, to the point where you can see the confidence building in embracing the absurdity of certain comic book concepts.
Yes, yeah.
To the point where we have Ragnarok, which is a complete Jack Kirby, colourful trip with giant wolves and all sorts of stuff going on. Whereas back in the day, I imagine there was a whole lot of debate about Loki's horns.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Although they were pretty settled on doing that, because it felt like if we didn't, then there would be some... We would have somehow done... wouldn't have done the character justice, because it's so, in the comics, so identifiable, even in a quite a early, almost kind of caricatured way. That very first Journey into Mystery panel,
yes,
he's cackling at the sky with these enormous horns on.
I will get you, Thor!
You know, you can hear the voice. And so it felt like at some point he should wear them. But yes, all these conversations actually, I mean, in the comics his costume is almost yellow. Yes. But Alexandra Byrne and I knew that a yellow costume just wasn't going to work. But so you sort of take a bit of green and then think, well, we could make it gold. Let's burnish the gold, make it a bit distressed. And thinking about even... It's funny to think about building him from scratch. Because... And I still find this fascinating, that if you describe Loki on the page as he is now, you know, this edgy, dark-haired, pale-skinned, very... this combination of... kind of emotional turmoil and twinkling delight and charm. I don't think you'd pick me out of a casting book. I just don't think, you know, it's so unlikely with my ginger beard and you know, you know, I'm just like born around the corner at the Middlesex Hospital. It's just, and it's so, I look back at it and think it's so extraordinary in a way that I ended up in this part. But I mean this sincerely, the privilege I've had is that he's this archetype, the trickster. Somebody who delights in chaos, someone whose role in society is to subvert and disrupt because he enjoys it. Mm-hmm. And this idea of incarnating mischief and what that means, rooting it in a familial drama, but also representing this sort of thing we're all afraid of, chaos. Mm. We like to believe as human beings that we can fashion order from the terrifying chaos that life is, and mostly we can't. Mm. And the idea that there's some archetypal being that represents that is amazing. And it's amazing the decisions we made, the decisions which are now almost set in stone. They've become part of the architecture.
I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, you did a fake Loki voice there for just a second, and I can imagine an iteration of this character where he does talk like that.
Yes, yes.
Oh, Thor, yes, I will
be revenge on you, Thor.
Should have played it like that.
There's still time to go back and George Lucas the whole thing. But the voice is very natural. It's your voice.
Yes. It's not quite. I mean, it's sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. And we play with that, actually. So every director that I've worked with across the films has asked for scenes in a more naturalistic tone. Mm-hmm. And then maybe each of them asked for sort of now lean into his kind of some sort of primal emotion, which represents that he's the antagonist. And so it becomes darker, more sinister, more... But sometimes for comedic effect, it's more like my voice in a way. like when pointing my scepter at Tony Stark's heart in Avengers. This usually works.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. And very naturalistic in Thor Ragnarok as well.
Yes. Yeah.
And I guess that comes from having so many movies in the MCU. I think you're unique in that you've been directed each time by a different director. I'd need to look at my spreadsheet,
That's
Tom,
correct.
As you know I have a spreadsheet.
That is correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Kenneth Branagh, Joss Whedon, Alan Taylor, Taika Waititi, Joe and Anthony Rousseau.
There we go.
Yeah.
So are you the through line then in keeping track of Loki? Because each director will bring something different to it. Each director will want something different from it. Are you the keeper of the key, so to speak?
That's really interesting. I always feel very kind of grateful and humbled when... So Taika and I went out for a bowl of pasta before we started Ragnarok, and he said, I'm going to change quite a lot, but I'm not going to change you. And I took that as a huge compliment.
Yeah.
But then he also, we did change things, actually. But he was really, you know, of course, as everyone's seen Ragnarok, he radically changed things, specifically with regards to Thor, you know, chop his hair, like just break him down, chop his hair off, and Asgard too. But I also, I do feel like it's different every time in a way that I'm not fully conscious of. But I've always felt a responsibility to both honour the respect in which the character is held, but also to try to take it and progress it on so that it isn't just me reheating the same meat in the microwave.
Yes. Because the Loki in Ragnarok is hugely different from the Loki that we meet back in the first Thor.
Totally, yeah.
And I would imagine, I'd probably say his evolution as a character is probably the most drastic of pretty much any character in the MCU. Where he goes from a conflicted villain in the first movie to trying to take over the Earth and kill lots of people in Avengers.
Mm.
And then by Thor Ragnarok, there's still a sense of the chaos, still a sense of the mischief.
Yes.
But certainly there's a sense of reconciliation with Thor, in a sense that he's no longer, even if you gave him the Tesseract, he wouldn't try and take over the world with it. That's my reading anyway. I don't know what yours is.
Yes. Well, I remember when I finally read Ragnarok. I mean, lots of it when I first, because it was a while before I actually saw the script or spoke to Taika, and eventually he pitched me the beginning with the sort of the idea of Thor coming back, and there being this play that Loki's watching, in the body of Anthony Hopkins as Odin, and it's all about self-glorification, but it's generally actually quite benign. It's just unbelievably narcissistic.
And
then I found the capitulation or the reconciliation of this drama that we started with Kenneth Branagh about a father and two sons.
Mm.
And there is that moment in Ragnarok where the first thing the real Odin says is, "Hello, my sons."
Yes.
Sons, plural.
Yes.
There's no distinction between Thor and Loki. They're both his sons. And that catches Loki off guard.
Yes.
And there isn't time in Ragnarok to explore the profundity of what that means to him, but that in that moment all of the axe that he's been grinding since that moment in the vault in the first film, where he felt like he didn't belong, where he felt like he was outside the family, the nuclear family, is sort of, if not fully healed, it's, he has a new perspective on it.
I've watched the scene a number of times, and Loki doesn't speak in that scene. Were there any lines? Did you have any lines that were cut, or was that a very conscious decision on your and Taika's part?
I don't remember, actually. I remember if there were any lines, there were very few.
Yeah.
But I do remember that the first thing he says after Odin's death is "brother."
Yes.
Turning to Thor as if to proffer an olive branch.
Yes.
To say this wasn't me.
Yeah.
This isn't my fault. You are my brother.
Mm.
And whatever happens next, we should stay together. You know, we need to look after each other or have each other's back. And I love the idea as Taika presented it and Kevin Feige and Ludi Esposito at Marvel, that what happens at the beginning of Ragnarok is so destabilizing for both Thor and Loki that actually they are all they have. As in, there's nothing left. Everyone's gone. Odin's gone. Frigga's gone.
Mm.
The Warriors Three are gone. Asgard is basically gone. And so Thor and Loki turn to each other and say, "You're all I have left."
Yes.
And actually, that's enough.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it all comes to a kind of a fulcral point in the elevator.
Mm. Yes.
I think, which was a very key scene. We all knew that was a key scene. We shot it very quickly.
Oh, really? Okay.
Literally, we shot it in about 20 minutes because we knew what it had to be. Taika knew he wanted it mostly in a two shot, so that it was they were finishing each other's sentences. You could see, and it's been really nice. So, Alan Taylor and Taika and the Russo brothers have been very respectful of the brotherly relationship between Chris and myself. They read it as real. They know it's real. They say, "This is the moment where you do your thing, where you." you talk to each other like you've known each other for all your lives, and every film touches on that moment, I think.
That's the scene where Hemsworth improvised Get Help as well, isn't
it? Get Help.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was originally Dead Fish.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay,
let's
play
Dead Fish.
It's humiliating.
Yes,
Dead Fish would be somehow even more
Loki
humiliating.
Loki is the Dead Fish, yeah. Yeah.
And you mentioned Alan Taylor there, and Thor the Dark World, from the outside looking in, seems to be the movie that had the most surgery performed upon it. Is that fair to say? What was it like being on the inside of that movie? I know there were reshoots, significant reshoots. And
yes, yeah. Well, I think initially the very well-intentioned idea was to try to kind of just rough up, sort of make rugged Asgard a bit more. That Asgard would have been introduced as it's an immaculate city. And you'd seen the palace and you'd seen all the royal chambers, you'd seen the public halls of state.
Yeah.
But you hadn't seen the pubs and you hadn't seen the corridors and you hadn't seen the streets. You hadn't sort of... So the design concept on the Dark World was to try and root Asgard, to try and get under the earth of it in a way, and it was quite serious in tone because of the threat of these ancient, the Dark Elves.
Yeah,
was supposed to be a very kind of just a terrifying premise.
Yeah.
And I think there were reshoots because actually the tone of the film never quite lifted. It actually, in a well-intentioned trying to root it in something, almost weighed it down. Mm-hmm. And so the reshoots were trying to just vary the tone a bit so it had a bit of light and shade. And the most interesting thing for me was about the Dark World was that Loki's... So this, I think, is the first time I've said this in a public context.
Right.
Is so Loki's death on Svartalheim was written as a death.
Oh wow, okay.
And so Chris and I played that scene for real.
Oh wow, okay. So that was it.
That was meant to be, yeah, that was meant to be sort of that he redeemed himself, he helped save his brother and helped save Jane Foster.
Yeah.
But that he in the process sacrificed himself.
And was that something that you had been pushing for? Or was that something
It was written. It was okay. Written very much. It was part of the original pitch, and in test screenings, the audience didn't accept it. They said he's just he's coming. He's obviously coming back. That didn't really happen. There was a very strange and almost unanimous resistance to it.
Wow.
They just decided that that wasn't the end. And then I think that this is the genius of what they do at Marvel is something unlocked itself for the producers, for Kevin, for Alan Taylor, and for the writers, which was what if that maybe that it wasn't real and that it was another shape-shifting...
Yeah.
Mercurial trick on Loki's part, and that he'd actually pulled the wool over everyone's eyes, including Thor.
Yes.
And at the very, very end of the film, the animus he has had for three films, which is that he wanted to be Thor's equal, he wanted to be accepted by Odin as an equal, he ends up on the throne. And it's such a great twist, and the reason it works is because I didn't even know it was a twist.
So you had your Michael Corleone moment just when I thought I was out.
Pull me back in. Yeah. So and that was also the beginning of Anthony Hopkins playing Odin as Loki.
Everything's connected.
It's all connected. Yeah.
It's the chaos theory in full effect.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that really speaks to the popularity of the character. And I don't know whether you have a feeling about this, but I don't think Marvel expected Loki to catch on the way that he has, given that he does try and wipe out a whole lot of people and kills Agent Coulson in the first Avengers. We should be booing and hissing him every time he comes on screen. But I think his popularity means that people say, no, we want him alive. We want to see him evolve and maybe lose some of the ragged edges a little bit.
I think that's part of the character, and that's why it's such a great character. Mm. And I think it goes back to the myths, is that he's part of the pantheon. Mm. He belongs in I mean, he's not so much a part of the pantheon that we don't have a day named after him, sadly.
Yeah.
You know, we have an Odin's Day, we have a Frigga's Day, and we have a Thor's Day.
Mm-hmm.
No Loki Day. So he obviously wasn't that important. yes, it's... I sort of owe that to the writing of the first film.
Uh-huh.
And I always think about the late Don Payne, who wrote that first script. And there is the scene in the vault where Odin tells Loki he's not in fact Thor's brother, or indeed an Odin's son.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you take away the reference to Jotunheim or Frost Giants or the specifics of the mythology, and you'd put that scene in any film, and it's a father telling a son
mm-hmm.
that he was adopted, and he hasn't. This is a lie that he has been unaware of.
Yeah.
It just works as drama. And Kenneth Branagh encouraged me and Anthony Hopkins to be so honest and vulnerable in that scene that it gives me, it has become a cornerstone to the entire characterization. So anything a little too mischievous, potentially malevolent, that Loki does in Avengers, in the Dark World, in Ragnarok, people go, yeah, but, you know, he's adopted. And people who haven't been very nice, you know, and also, like, also the moment where, you know, Loki is hanging off the edge of a cliff, trying to win his father's pride, and his father's response is simply no.
Yeah.
People have compassion for Loki's predicament. So I think I'm really lucky in that there's a vulnerability and there's a terrible rage and heartbreak at the center of him, which gives me more license to go further with the mischief.
Mm.
And that in the characterization is a unique cocktail, to be so charming, so twinkling, so wicked and delightful, but underneath it are these shifting continents of emotional pain.
Mm.
And that's a gift for any actor.
I did ask a number of your fans, so I've got lots of questions, but I'll throw a couple of quickfire ones at you.
Okay, I'll try and be quick and not so loquacious.
So this one comes from @jam_wa. How did Loki know the word quim? there's a cracker to start with.
Because Joss Whedon wrote it.
As simple as that. Now, Loki... @Loki_Lego, I believe this is an account of which you are aware. Yes,
yes. Lego Loki. Let's just give it up for Lego Loki. Lego versions of almost every film I've made.
It's incredible.
It's incredible. Yeah. And there's an entire Lego version of High Rise. almost every frame, and also the stage plays.
Yeah,
Coriolanus, Hamlet.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Let's give it up, everybody.
Give it up for Lego Loki, who asks, please ask Thomas if he knows how to get to Greenwich from Charing Cross on the tube.
Listen, I took this up with everybody at Marvel. I saw the film and I said, guys, come on. You made this film in London. Why did nobody ask... Thor say? He says it's three stops on the
Three stops,
line.
Yeah. Three stops, change here and there, go three stops.
As long as I live and breathe, forget the groans at the London premiere when everybody who got the tube was, come on. What's on the Circle line? Yeah. Everyone knows it's the DLR.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember saying to everyone at Marvel, like, you had a whole British crew, why didn't you just ask them?
Yeah.
Anyway, precisely. It makes me laugh.
Do you know how to do it, though?
How to get to Greenwich from where?
Charing Cross.
I mean, I'm a North Londoner, so...
Oh, come on, Tom.
So, hang on a second. The Jubilee? No. It's the DLR,
you can do
it?
The Jubilee, yeah. You can do the Jubilee.
You get the Jubilee from Bank? No, from Waterloo.
You go to Waterloo.
So you go Northern Line, Waterloo.
And then Jubilee to North Greenwich.
Jubilee to North Greenwich.
Get a couple of buses into Greenwich.
It's not called the DLR anymore, is it?
It is called the DLR, but that goes from Bank. So you go from Charing Cross to Bank.
There you
go. Get the DLR. And you've got a number of stations that I choose.
Nine points to Gryffindor.
Terry Girl MD asks, have you ever stolen something from the set as a memento of Loki?
I wish I had. No, I haven't. Chris has about 8 hammers.
He must be doing a lot of DIY.
Yeah.
And then the last thing from Fixworth is, if you were trapped in one of Doctor Strange's time loops, which Loki scene would you be happy to play over and over and over again?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Can I throw that back at you while I think about it? Which scene do you think I should play over and over and over again?
Well, it depends. If you want to play something fun, then it might be something from Ragnarok.
Yeah.
If you want to play...
Get Help, that would just hurt.
That would be bad. In terms of raw emotional power... And you don't want to play the Hulk ragdoll sequence again.
You can't play the vault scene because
that's
nobody
tough.
Can cry that much.
Yeah.
At some point, you have to stop crying. what scene would I like to play? It's funny, when you ask me that question, like, it is probably got to be a scene with Chris Hemsworth.
Mm.
And it's worth saying because, as the world now knows, he's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
But he always has been hilarious. And so whenever we're doing those two-handers, we've now been doing it for... average 8 years, 9 years, we'd have the best time. And he's a great friend and a lovely man. So something with him.
Okay. Not I have been falling for 30 minutes.
Well, then I'd be falling forever. not the elevator scene. Which one would it be? Which one do you think? Out of all the scenes, I can't think.
I like the elevator scene. I also like the scene in Ragnarok.
Just a terrible block where I can't remember the scenes.
I like the scene where you visit him in a spectral form, piss off ghost, that scene. You have a very nice heart-to-heart.
Yes, that's a good one. Yeah. And also, there's actually some good scenes in the Dark World. The scene in the Dark World actually when they're doing all that tricking of Malekith.
Oh yes,
with
yes.
Jane Foster.
Yeah,
we had a very good time. We were on a there's a glacier on top of a volcano in Iceland, and which is where all the Black Earth comes from.
Mm-hmm.
We had an absolute hoot at the top of that hill. It was so stupid. We're both very silly individuals, and we bring out the silliness in each other, I think.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, there you go.
Tom.
Thank you, Chris.
Say goodbye to Loki. Or do we? I don't know. Let's not get into it. We'll see.
We shall see.
All right, brilliant. Yeah. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
Man.
Cheers.
And that was Tom Hiddleston, and that is it for this special episode of the Empire Podcast. Don't forget the Avengers Infinity War spoiler special is up on Monday. That's the 30th of April, I think. I'm not entirely sure. You probably should check that. And the regular podcast is out every Friday. If you don't already, please do subscribe. And if you could leave some lovely 5-star reviews on iTunes, that would be amazing. Anyway, until we and Tom Hiddleston meet again, it's time for me to make a low-key exit. See what it did? Anyway, see you next time. Bye.